Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. INCOG, the Indian Nation Council of Governments, is currently working on another part of the planning process for transportation across Tulsa and its surrounding communities. If you remembered last year, they did a mass transit master plan. But on any drive across the area, it becomes readily apparent that while we have numerous off-road walking and biking trails, our streets and arterials don't accommodate pedestrians and bikes all that well. INCOG is beginning to put a people-powered transportation master plan in place for bicyclists and pedestrians. The Bicycle Pedestrian Master Plan is an effort to identify and prioritize bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure projects for the 11 cities in the Tulsa metro area. The end result will be a comprehensive look at bicycle and pedestrian facilities featuring on-street bikeways, bike lanes, traffic signals, sidewalks, and crosswalks with a recommended prioritization process for the participating communities. Joining us to talk about this process, which is just getting underway this spring, is James Wagner, a Transportation Projects Coordinator at INCOG, and Jeff Kabati, Project Manager for Tool Design Group, which is a consultant to many cities across the country who are developing similar bicycle and pedestrian master plans. They join us today here on Studio Tulsa. Jeff and James, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich.
Thank you, Rich.
James, let me start with you. INCOG has just finished a master plan for our transit system and mass transit. Now you're turning to pedestrian and bicycles. Is this part of a sort of an overarching master plan eventually so that we are, you know, not only tackling single passenger transportation in the city, but also a whole variety of ways?
Right. One of the things that INCOG is actually required to do as part of the federal transportation law is to do long-range transportation planning for all modes. And so this effort, the regional transit plan effort, was kind of focusing on transit. Now we're going to focus on bike, pedestrian. And really what this will all add up to is that we will eventually adopt those two elements as well as the roadway element into our long-range plan when we update that in a couple years. And so we've taken this approach to kind of focusing on these different elements individually rather than trying to do them all at once, which is what many of the organizations around the country do. And we've done that just so that we can, for the public's perspective, so that we can focus in on these modes and not have kind of the shotgun approach to planning, but be very focused on what we're doing. And even within bicycle and pedestrian planning, they're very different modes if you really think about it. And so even we'll have to dissect some of that a little bit more as we go through the process.
It seems like what planning we've had for bicycles has been pretty much ad hoc, and it's in response to the possibility of accidents and the fact that we do have a lot of bicycles using certain roadways in the city, and they want to get to river parks, they want to get to the trail system, and some people are using it for straight commutes,
right?
And we don't really have anything in place.
Yeah, and I think what you see, in back in 1999, INCOG developed a regional trails plan, and really the objective there was to connect all of the suburban communities to Tulsa with trails. And largely we've accomplished that. There's still a couple suburban communities, Owosso and Bixby being the largest of those two, that aren't yet connected, and most of that is because of floodplain issues connecting those. But for the most part, we've done that. And so if you think about kind of the analogy that we use in the roadway system about the highways and expressways and arterial and collector roads, we've built the highway network, if you will, for bike and pedestrian transportation, and that's the trail system that extends to Broken Arrow and to Skiatook and to Sand Springs. And what we haven't done, though, is really connect what we think of as the arterial network, which would be connecting from the neighborhoods to the trail. So that'll be a big focus of this plan, is trying to eliminate the barriers that you would have in order to get from your neighborhood to the trail system and start to be able to use this system more for more than just recreation. So we really want to be able to have a system for bikes and pedestrians that is able to be used as transportation.
And I assume the second part of it having to do with pedestrians, again, this focuses right into mass transit. You'll want to walk to some place to be able to catch a bus or whatever that next mass transit platform is down the road.
Right.
And right now, we don't even have any of that. I mean, in many ways, we're better equipped for bicycles than we are for pedestrians.
Absolutely. Because I think, you know, when you look at the bicycle picture, you know, technically a bicycle is a vehicle, so you can ride it anywhere on the road. Doesn't mean everyone feels safe doing that. But as a pedestrian, often there isn't really infrastructure to be able to walk on a sidewalk because there aren't sidewalks in many places. And you mentioned the transit aspect of it. You know, every transit rider is a pedestrian at the beginning and the end of their trip. So there are transit corridors that are heavily used that don't have sidewalks still today. And of course, Peoria is the project that there's been a lot of focus on. And so we'll be working hard to make sure that that corridor in particular, because there's so many transit riders, will be a focus of the pedestrian elements of this plan.
So that means if a neighborhood doesn't have sidewalks, they're going to see sidewalks at least leading towards the arterial pretty quick.
And actually, as part of the funding package that the Tulsa voters passed in November, the sidewalks to lead up to the Peoria stations as part of that BRT, that was included in the package. So that'll be part of that in terms of the implementation funding. But then also, of course, other routes, you know, have similar issues where there's not sidewalks and there's not the ability for people with disabilities, for example, to use curb ramps and that sort of thing to cross the street.
Let's turn to Jeff Kabati, who is the project manager for Tool Design Group, which is a consultant with NCOG that's helping to develop this bicycle and pedestrian master plan. Jeff, first of all, I assume a lot of cities are we kind of behind the curve here in Tulsa as far as cities developing pedestrian and bicycle master plans, or is this something that's really happening all around the country now?
It really is. There's a huge trend occurring in hundreds, if not thousands, of cities across the country, and there's a wide spectrum of where the cities are along that continuum of bicycle and pedestrian friendliness. Communities have realized that since the 1950s, our highway systems and our road systems have been built specifically for motor vehicle transportation, and in many ways that has bisected communities all across the country, making it really difficult and unsafe for communities and families to get from a school to a neighborhood, to get to a business center, to run errands. And so what we're seeing happening is communities are kind of retrofitting themselves. And I think in many ways, the Tulsa region, because this is indeed a regional plan looking at 11 cities in this region, is actually well positioned to capitalize on a lot of national trends that are occurring in terms of additional bicycle facilities that are now online, that are innovative. Communities are looking at them as ways to connect themselves and to connect their regions. Tulsa is lucky, this region is lucky because it has that sort of basic infrastructure of trails on the ground. And there's lots of good examples of where cities have taken advantage of that basic trails infrastructure and really knitted together a wonderful transportation system that is alternative to motor vehicle traffic.
Now, when it comes to bicycles, I would think that a car-developed city, which Tulsa mainly is, I mean, Tulsa is a city that is built around an automobile, might have an advantage over, say, an eastern city that predates the car as the central mode of transportation, just because we tend to build things wider and we have a little more room to accommodate different modes of transportation.
That is a sort of a fortunate consequence of looking at the Tulsa region and having spent some time there. There is excess capacity on many of the roadways that we're really going to be able to sort of dive into and get creative with and coordinating with all the communities in the area. So I think we can look at things like road and lane diet, sort of reducing the width of a road in order to accommodate additional modes of transportation. There really is those possibilities in this region.
But I have a question for both of you. Is Tulsa really a dense enough city at this particular point, when I'm talking about the city density, for major usage of bicycles and pedestrian traffic? Because we are pretty spread out, too.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, when you think about how long it takes, typically to walk a mile takes about 20 minutes. To bike a mile takes about 5 minutes. And so you think about the 20-minute commute that most people have in Tulsa. When it comes to walking, you are probably limited. You know, maybe a mile and a half is maybe the most people would be willing to walk for a work trip. For other types of trips, maybe even longer. For the bike trip, that equivocates to about 4 miles. And so, you know, I think there is, when you look at where the employment centers are, I think there's quite a bit of housing that's within that radius. And so I think on the bicycle side, if you're thinking about transportation, you know, that would be a more reachable goal. Now, I think the transit system is where you really can leverage some of this. And so as the bus rapid transit on Peoria develops, you know, that runs 15 miles up and down Peoria. And the ability to augment the trip with a transit trip makes that much more achievable. So really what you're trying to do with the pedestrian side is achieve what we call the last mile segment of the trip. Not necessarily the whole trip, but the last mile segment.
From the front door to an arterial,
right.
Basically.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that aligns well with sort of what we know at the national level through a national household travel survey that, you know, up to 40% of the trips in the U.S. are 3 miles or less, and about 17% are less than 1 mile. And the vast majority of those trips are taken by automobiles. So if we think about the network that is possible in the Tulsa region, we're looking for those short trips. If you can move people to their feet or some wheels for those short trips, you've achieved quite a deal of mode shift, that is, shift from one transportation mode to another in a very healthy way.
Of course, in a lot of neighborhoods in Tulsa where, you know, even a trip to the corner store, you know, you're going to either walk in the street or you're going to drive in the street, and I think that's a pretty easy choice,
right.
Unfortunately. Well, one of the things I was looking at some of the master plans that Tula has worked on and also that are they're showing up around the region, and the idea of the end product is really interesting because I think somebody mentioned smaller lanes that would still accommodate traffic, but set-asides. And there's some really interesting concept in how to handle bicycle on a busy arterial street. Mm-hmm. Jeff, can you maybe talk about some of the ways?
Yeah, well, a lot of that comes through the analysis period when you go and visit a street and you sort of take note of how fast the vehicles are going, what the lane width is, what the entire street width is, what that street connects to, does it connect to important destinations? And you take all these considerations and evaluate and look at your toolbox, you know, all the way from a shared road where bicycles can just share the roadway all the way to a separated facility like a trail. And in between, there's cycle tracks and on-road bicycle facilities. So you look at your entire toolbox, you look at the road itself and what's available in terms of its sort of geometry, and you make an analysis, and you work that analysis, and you bring those analysis and recommendations to the public and kind of vet them through the public process, and at the end of the game, you've come up with a sort of a series of recommendations for the roads in the area that hopefully connect to your trail system and the important places where folks want to go to and from. And then your final product really kind of tells the story of how you're going to phase in those projects over time, which ones are more important than others, where the money's going to come from. These plans really are intended to sort of ask and answer the hard questions of putting a network like this together.
I was struck by your comment about watching the speeds, because here in Tulsa we have this straight block grid system, which encourages drivers actually to probably drive faster than you normally would in a on a major commercial arterial, just because it's straight and, you know, the lights, how it works, the speeds tend to be higher. Is the theory that the higher the speeds, the more separation you need for bike paths and bike right of way?
I think in some cases, yes, but again, it depends on sort of what you have to work with. So there may be an opportunity to sort of reduce the width in order to allow and accommodate for additional modes of travel. And in that case, often you see the actual vehicle slowing down and being more aware. And with all of that is sort of this layer of education at the same time. So you want to be reaching out in many different venues across the region and educate both bicyclists, walkers, and drivers about sort of the new reality that there's going to be lots more people on the road that are not necessarily in automobiles, and sort of learn how to treat one another. One of the nice trends that we've seen in some sort of bicycling cities around the country that have started studying themselves, one of them is the city of Portland that has over 250 miles of bicycle facilities, and they've started to track the relationship between the provision of bicycles and different facilities with crash rates and bicycle use. And they have found that bicycle use increases as bikeway miles go up, and crash rates decrease as bicycle use goes up at the same time. So the message there is that the more folks you get on the road using different modes of travel, the more aware everyone is and the safer the environment you create.
I was really struck by looking at some of the ideas that are out there, like, for example, bike lanes where you might have a little buffer between the actual it's still part of the roadway, but there's this little raised buffer that lets drivers know they're drifting into the bike lane. Again, it's a little buffer between the bike lane and the... And then the other thing is when you come to a signal light, if you're a biker, you I'm not sure you're really heavy enough to trigger the automatic light signals. Mm-hmm. And so what a lot of times what you have is bikers who are breaking the traffic rules because there's no accommodation for them, like traveling across on a red light, going in the wrong direction, against traffic, and basically breaking the rules of the road because there's no accommodation. And I was really struck by some of the little tools in which basically there's bikers' sensor pads to change the lights, or like we have pedestrians, a much shorter light cycle for a bicyclist to punch a button on a pole next to the street. Mm-hmm. Where they can get the light to change. To me, that's real interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting infrastructure things happening. The buffered bike lane is really catching on in a lot of different places, and it takes on all different types of variations. And so there's in some cases where the buffer is between parked cars on the right because of the door zone, opening doors, and the bike itself. There's other cases where the buffer is between the travel way to your left and the bike lane. And actually, one of the things we'll be doing is we have an online survey that has kind of a photo preference survey, and it shows some variations of these, and it says which one of these would you feel more comfortable as a cyclist being in. And so it kind of compares some of those. But that's definitely something that I think increases the ability, and kind of one of the terms we've used is the kind of the 8 to 80 concept, and that is that you're really kind of going for a design that is comfortable for people that are ages 8 to 80 and trying to develop a system that works for that range. And so and then on the signalization system, one of the things that's really taking on now is visual detection, where there's actually a infrared camera that is picking up the heat of the vehicle or the cyclist and actually changing the signal based on that instead of the loop detectors that are in the street. So they're actually better for maintenance and they're less expensive anyway. So a lot of the signal systems are already changing to that. And in fact, if you go down to the Brady District, you'll see that on Brady Street.
So. Right, exactly. What about the idea of having more accommodation means that bikers are more likely to follow the traffic rules? Because I think any person who's either been on a bike or driving and seen the intersection, a lot of times it can be chaotic because of no accommodation. There's no rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think obviously right now what people are doing, what's supposed to happen is that the cyclists are supposed to just follow the rules of the road just like you are a vehicle. So you ride to the right, but actually most cyclists prefer to be not hugging the curb because then cars can pass you in that same lane and potentially clip you. And so there's actually an ordinance that's now enacted in Tulsa that wasn't before that says that you have to have at least 3 feet of space between the car and that cyclist. And so that's a state law, but it wasn't a city ordinance. It is now. So educating people about what these rules are is kind of the tricky thing to do. And it's difficult to reach out and find those sources of communication that educate people about that kind of thing.
I think the best education is lines on the street, though.
Right.
And Jeff, I just wonder what your thoughts are on that.
There's been a wonderful evolution of sophistication in both the design and the technology of bicycle and pedestrian facilities over the last 20 years. So, and there's excellent guidelines out there at the federal and the state level that we'll be following as we make recommendations to the Tulsa region. So there's, as I was saying earlier, there's just a lot more tools in the toolbox, and we, the planning and design of bicycle and pedestrians is very much ingrained into the transportation world now. And we have benefited from looking at transportation models and understanding how they deal with traffic flow and understanding where their safety mechanisms are. And that has translated into developing bicycle and pedestrian facilities. So I think it is a great time for the Tulsa region to be looking at improving access and safety for all of their citizens.
My guests today are Jeff Kabaty, a project manager for Tool Design Group, who's a consultant for NCOG, and my other guest is James Wagner, a transportation projects coordinator at the Indian Nations Council of Governments. So we talk about the Tulsa's Regional Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan, which is underway now. So, James, give us a sense of what the timeline is. How can people participate? You had a great public turnout on the mass transit master plan. Mm-hmm. So what's the plan for public input on this?
Yeah, we've continued to innovate on the public involvement side of things. On the transit plan, we had this bus that went around and went and stopped in all these different communities. On this project, kind of our innovative public outreach approach is what we're calling walk shops. And it's obviously just kind of a blend of a walking workshop. And we have 15 of these planned in March and April. And essentially each of the 11 communities will have one, and then the city of Tulsa will have four. And so we will be starting those March 6th and then continuing on through March and April. And what people will be able to do with those is meet with us. We'll have some kind of illustrative information about bicycle and pedestrian facilities on a board. And then we'll literally take a little walking tour, probably 30 to 45 minutes, hopefully in nice spring weather, and be able to see some of the elements of good and maybe not so good design in terms of pedestrian. We've purposely made the locations of these to be where you can kind of see a blend of good design elements and design elements that can be improved upon. And then we'll come back and there'll be a little survey that you fill out, and then we'll kind of have a discussion about what people saw. So that'll be a great opportunity. Our big kickoff event is March 4th, and that will be at the TCC Center for Creativity. And that really is the opportunity for people to come and hear about this plan. Jeff will be speaking. Dr. Clancy from OU Tulsa will be there as well, kind of giving the keynote on that and connecting this with the health issues as well. So those are our two big opportunities. And then we'll also have a really interesting way for people to participate, even if they can't make these meetings. One is a survey that you fill out online, and that's pretty typical. I think I mentioned the photo preferences between different facilities. The other way is through what we call a wiki map, and this will actually enable you to go onto a map and literally draw routes that you'd like to take, or maybe routes that you can't take because there's not any facilities there, or places where it's difficult to cross the street. And so you'll be able to add that, and then that will all be kind of a crowdsource guide for us to have people give input that is geographic in nature.
Well, it sounds really interesting. Jeff, I want to ask you a question. Having worked with a variety of communities, Tulsa is really an automotive-based city, like many Midwest and Western cities. We do have this great trail system, so we do have this mixed use going on, so I think we're maybe a little better suited than some communities. Is it a hard transformation for strong auto-dominated cities to sort of make this change for accommodation? And you know, and really when you do it on a whole-scale level, you're looking at a pretty expensive retrofit over the course of years.
Sure, but to some degree, you're talking about cultural change and changing behaviors in a significant way. And I think there's a lot of things that are aligning that are getting people and communities to really look at the necessity for transformation and really, you know, creating a balance in their transportation system, in accommodating other modes of travel. I think. Because there's multiple benefits associated with creating this type of infrastructure and having safe access to it, you look at the benefits of economics. You know, communities are realizing in order to be competitive, they need to have a nice livable place where businesses and industries and new employees are going to want to live. And creating seamless bicycle and pedestrian networks are part of that livability. You know, there's an economic component to it where, you know, bicycling itself is the second most popular outdoor activity in the United States right now, second only to running and jogging. And that creates, you know, upwards of $47 billion in trip-related expenditures every year. So, you know, it depends on sort of where the pressure points are on which segments of the community get excited about this. And I think if you look at health, you know, we realize that there's, you know, many of the population are dealing with obesity. And looking, especially our children, trying to find ways for them to exercise on a regular basis. And if getting out on a bike every day, doing some sort of activity is a way to get healthy, and you've created a safe place to do that, then you're increasing the health of the community. So I think in many ways, there's a lot of hot buttons that a community can realize these benefits for these for the bike ped facilities.
Now, is there a city out there that, say, in the Midwest or in sort of this auto-centric area of the country that is a good model for us? Or are most cities sort of in the same situation as Tulsa? You're kind of having, you're in the midst of sort of dealing with this retrofitting your infrastructure to accommodate large number of bicycles along with auto traffic.
I think many of the cities in your region are sort of in a similar situation, although there are places like Wichita, Kansas, which we were part of their planning process, and that actually is one of my sort of public outreach goals. They had over 3,000 people be part of and help create the plan through multiple levels of public outreach. So I think there will be great results from that planning process. We had sent you some information on Dallas, Texas, and really looking at the opportunities and constraints there. Even in Edmond, Oklahoma, they're creating a new bike plan, looking at their trail system as well. So I think everyone is on a different spectrum at this point, but I think the common ingredients of what it takes in order to make that transformation the Tulsa region is doing, that is adopting some sort of bicycle pedestrian master plan, focusing on a comprehensive connected network that includes on and off street facilities, looking at innovation, bike boxes and green bike lanes and cycle tracks, and looking at how they're going to create an ongoing and an effective public involvement in education program. And then another piece of that is events, and maybe bike share programs into the future, making sure you're promoting and marketing bicycling and walking as an integral part of living in this region.
Now, James, this is a master plan that will be eventually put together. It's not an implementation plan, but do you feel like there's enough buy-in from the decision makers at the city and the county level to make some of these things happen fairly quickly?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, as part of the Improve Our Tulsa package, there is a little over $4 million that was actually earmarked just to implement this plan for the city of Tulsa. So in other words, the projects that we will prioritize for the city of Tulsa, the first $4.2 million of those will be implemented as part of the Improve Our Tulsa package. So we're really excited about that. The other communities didn't have – the timing wasn't right for that to be the case. But there literally will be a list of projects for each of the 11 cities that will be prioritized. And then they can start applying for grants. They can start putting matching funds together, maybe even with philanthropic sources to start implementing some of this stuff.
And when you say projects, you're talking about maybe a corridor –
Right.
As opposed to a piecemeal approach across the city.
Exactly. So an example of one that's already in progress now is Fourth Place, which connects University of Tulsa to downtown and even further to the east between Yale and Sheridan. There's already a road diet happening there where they've reconstructed that road. And so that road was a four-lane road, but now it's going to be basically a two-lane road with on-street parking and bike lanes. And so that kind of thing. And most of these are not going to be changing the curb of the street. It's going to be changing the striping of the street to better accommodate for that. And that's on the bicycle side. On the pedestrian side, we're probably talking about curb ramps and perhaps mid-mile crossings. There's many places in Tulsa where there's not a crossing for the entire mile because there's no signal. There's no way for you to get it. It's a barrier. It literally is a barrier. So signalization at some of those places, I think, is something you're likely to see.
And that will probably slow down speeds.
It will. Yeah, right. So,
well, that's good news, too. Well, anyway, gentlemen, thanks very much. How do people get information to be a participant in this process?
Yeah, the best way is through our website. The web address is tulsatrc.org, and look for the Go Plan logo.
James and Jeff, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Thanks, Rich.
James Wagner is a transportation projects coordinator at NCOG, and Jeff Cabotti is the project manager for Tool Design Group, the consultant for the Tulsa Regional Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan. The planning process is just getting underway. You can learn more at ncog.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.